What is this, Pat? We're at episode something, but more importantly, we're celebrating a fifth birthday.
Yeah, wow, man. Man, 5 years. I still remember the conversation that we had. I was at work. I was still working for a company that will not be named. And
let's name the podcast first. This is Rock Under Fire, the Rock Under Fire podcast. Okay, go ahead.
I remember the conversation of when you first brought me on board. We had Stick with us, obviously, at that moment as well. And I was like, wow, this is going to be a really cool thing, man. I was really into it. You were really into it. And here we are 5 years later, still into it. And might not be as frequent as we would like, but, you know, we have lives and stuff like that happens. And, you know, I had some financial issues with job changing and, but like I said, I mean, here we are 5 years later, and that says a lot. I think it speaks volumes. We've had some really cool guests. We've had some fantastic conversations. And outside of the, you know, it's amazing. Outside of the show, we've had some conversations with friends of ours who listen to the show. And it's sparked some great conversations with them. Like if we're out at the bar or something one night or just, I don't know, on social media or something. I think that it's. I like that. It's got people talking. It's got us talking, and I enjoy that.
It's funny that you mentioned the consistency of the show and not having had like a consistent schedule. And we spent a few years trying to figure out what kind of podcast we wanted to be. Did we want to be one of those year-round shows that just never stop, that are, you know, one of these like shows like Three Sides of the Coin, that have been weekly since 2012, nonstop. I mean, I don't think those guys have rarely, if ever, missed a week. That kind of dedication, and that kind of scared us. We're kind of like, I don't know about that. You know, there's going to be some, you know, eventually things are going to happen where we're not going to want to do it, or we can't do it, or we're just going to go on burnout, which for me is the biggest thing. It's just burnout.
It's a lot. It's really a lot.
So I think we kind of had a, For now, we're just going to do a bi-weekly thing, and we're not going to do it every week. We'll do it twice a month. And we, at some point, we were even doing it year-round. We just went from December to January, and that first year was nonstop. Once we crossed over into, by the end of 2016, and crossed over into 2017, we were nonstop. I don't think we missed a week in 2017 into 2018.
Yeah, we're pumping just it like out.
We kind of fell into this thing where we would do our holiday episode, our Christmas show in December, and then we would kind of reassemble around April. Usually like right when spring starts, you know, a few weeks after spring starts, we kind of start talking about getting together again and planning some new shows. So that's kind of been the way we've done things for the past 3 or 4 years. And it just kind of became one of these, season four is beginning. Now it's season five. It's been a pretty cool trip.
Absolutely.
What else is going on now? We can go in so many directions. The last show we did was early December. Things were getting crazy around the country. You know, we were kind of wondering what was going to happen and how things were going to happen and how shit was going to go down. And thankfully, we passed through that. It is now May.
Things are starting to open back up.
Things are starting to open back up. That was another thing is last year, all of our shows were done over the phone. First, probably by necessity, because, you know, me being me, I'm totally clueless to technology and what we're doing now. And now we're doing this as a Zoom call. Now, most podcasts have been doing this this way for like the past, 10 years? Not through Zoom, maybe through Skype, maybe through something else, through Google or whatever else there is. But I'm usually about 10 years late to everything. Whatever technology is being used now, I'll get to when I turn 60. One of the first questions that Pat asked me is, will we be showing this? Will we be using the video? This is the first time that we're using video on this podcast, but our listeners are not going to see it. A lot of podcasts are visual. You can see the people that you're listening to. You can see their faces. I won't speak for you, but I don't know if I want anybody seeing my ugly mug.
Well, I'm glad we're not showing a video, because you know, since we've been doing these on the phone, and now this one, I like to do these naked. So I mean, I don't want anybody watching.
Well, I'm glad I can only see you from the chest up. You
know? I don't know, man. You know, a lot's been going on. I guess you know, I want to throw this right out there, because you picked them as the saviors of rock and roll. And there is a new Greta Van Fleet album out.
Wait, back up. Back up.
The future of rock and roll.
No, I didn't. I put the question out.
Okay, fair enough. I should have rephrased that.
Out there. Yeah.
Fair enough. I should rephrase that. You said, could they be the future of rock and roll? They have a new record out. I've only heard a couple of clips. I did download the record. I'm looking very forward to listening to it, because what I've heard, really, hey, man, go with what you know. If they sound like Zeppelin, do it. If I sounded like Robert fucking Plant, I'm going to sing like Robert fucking Plant, and that's it. And you're going to hear it every fucking night. So, like I said, maybe I'll do a review like I did with the Pearl Jam record. We'll go from there. But I'm really looking forward to it. Speaking of Pearl Jam, I know I'm jumping around a little bit. Last year, because of COVID, they were headlining the See Here Now Festival in Asbury Park, and that got postponed. Rumor has it that it's going to go on this year. We haven't heard otherwise. The Smashing Pumpkins were added to that bill as well, and I will be at that show. So there will be a big-time review of a new Pearl Jam set list that I'm really looking forward to in the fall of this year.
Do they have that announced yet? Do they have an official date for that?
Yeah, September 18th, 19th.
Oh wow! Yeah. So this is where I kind of being proved wrong, and I always say I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. I gotta admit, and part of me still thinks maybe some shit can go down, but I honestly didn't think we'd be seeing any shows in 2021.
Yeah,
you know, there was a period going into the year where the biggest authorities on the music industry were all in agreement that there will be no major shows in 2021. We have to wait until maybe the summer of 2022 at best. I kind of believed it. Part of me still says, I don't see anything happening in 2021. I think everything that's scheduled for 2021 is going to be canceled anyway.
In the back of my mind, I feel the same. I do hope you're wrong, but in the back of my mind, I kind of feel the same way. I hope we're both wrong. I'm like, okay, how are they going to do this? It's a giant outdoor thing. So, you know, the seating arrangement's a little more manageable. But, I had also tickets for Black Crowes at PNC Arts Center last year. That got postponed. Notice the word, they didn't get canceled. They got postponed. Huge word there in regards to getting your money back. Supposedly that was going to go down this summer at PNC. So we'll see. It's a show I really want to see. So hopefully they get that off without a hitch as well.
And just how are they going to do this in terms of the venues? Because you have a lot of major artists, all of the live major artists who are rescheduling their tours. They're rebooking the arenas. This guy's going to be at the Garden in such and such a date. These guys are going to be at the Garden on so-and-so, right? Are they selling full capacity? Are they selling half capacity? How are they doing these arena shows? That's got to be the question. Because once you put an arena on sale, how many tickets are you making available?
Yeah, that's a great point. And it's funny because I was thinking the same thing, because I've been hearing all over the radio now that Genesis is doing a tour. I might go see that, actually. It'll be the last time you probably get to see Genesis, and I've never seen them. I'm not a huge fan of theirs, but I think they're really, just to see them, it would be worth it for me. But it got me thinking along the lines of you, like, how are they going to do this at the Garden? What's the seating arrangement like? I mean, is it every other seat? Are they going to say, okay, you can't come in unless you're vaccinated? I mean, look, I am vaccinated and I'm for the vaccination. I know that a lot of people aren't, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with people not wanting to get vaccinated. That's their, that, you know, you don't want to get a flu shot, that's on you. But you can't tell people you can't come in because you're not vaccinated. I don't think that that's right. Can you segregate the groups? Like, okay, vaccinated people in this section, non-vaccinated people over here. Yeah, okay. I think I'm all right with that because you're still allowed into the show. But you can't just flat out say, no vaccine, you can't get in. It's not like an airplane, you know? I mean, no vaccine, you can't get on, which is they're going to push for.
Even if they were going to implement something like that, supposing hypothetically they were going to, they don't have the structure to put in place or enforce that in any way, shape, or form at this point.
Nowhere near it.
Still figuring it out. Want to get everybody vaccinated, as many people as possible. And then if it comes down to, you know, there's that possibility that, oh, this is inevitable and it's going to become mandatory and you're not going to be able to get into Disney World and you're not going to be able to get into a movie theater and this, that, and the other thing. If that's down the road, they haven't figured it out yet. So, yeah. I wouldn't even worry about that yet.
But it's like, I mean, that's a big tour, Genesis. So right off the bat, I started thinking right along the lines you did. I'm like, well, how are they going to manage this? And it's multiple places in the city. I think they're doing the Garden. I mean, I might have heard it wrong. I know they're doing the Garden. Maybe Barclays as well.
And it's not even a thing about the concert industry itself. Like, it's not for Live Nation to even make that determination or because, like, if you're looking at a venue like the, I could speak with the Garden. If you watch, like, if you like basketball, the Knicks have about 2,000 people per game allowed into the Garden. And you look around the arena, it doesn't look like 2,000, you know, they're just so spread out. But when you hear them, it sounds like a pretty big crowd. And it's just like,
what's that hold about? And, what are they holding about? 18,000 for a sporting event?
Maybe a little bit less, because since they redid the Garden, they knocked down a couple of tiers and full of luxury boxes and all that stuff. So the Garden used to be about 20,000 or just under 20,000. I'd say they knocked it down by a couple thousand at this point.
And for a concert, And for the concerts, you have that floor space, so you're adding another couple thousand there.
Yeah.
I always enjoyed the Garden. I saw Billy Joel. The last show I saw there was Billy Joel, and I have always enjoyed that venue. I think the sounds are really the way it's like a dome. You really get a nice sound off of that ceiling in there. I really do enjoy that place a lot.
Yeah. It's because of the layout of the Garden or any sports arena for that matter. I mean, it's just hard to picture a major artist on a stage coming in, bringing in the entire production, lights, sound, all the trucks loading in the back, going up, putting that entire thing, that entire production that takes usually 12 to 18 hours to set up, and bringing in 2,000 people.
Yeah, that's
in a 20,000 seat arena. You know, I mean, I can't. So, are they just kind of confidently throwing this shit at the wall and hoping that it sticks? That they're going to put all these dates back on sale and people are going to come out again and buy all this shit all over again?
I think those capacity numbers are going to continue to increase, and we've already seen that coming within the next few weeks, especially in New Jersey, as far as like being able to be at a bar. All of a sudden, now coronavirus doesn't reside at a bar. I can order a drink across the bar. Right?
Yeah, they made that determination in the past week, right? That just happened in the last. Yeah. I mean, in New Jersey, that just happened in the last 24 hours, 48 hours.
Yeah,
you can now sit at a bar.
And that one actually aggravated me right from the get go. I can sit 4 or 5 feet from the bar, but I can't reach over the bar. I'm not even reaching over the bar. A patron doesn't reach over the bar. But a bartender can't hand me a drink sitting at the bar. I think it's
10 o'clock curfew. You know, well, the virus comes back after 10 o'clock.
It does. You know, but then I realized you have all the open bottles and everything there. And, you know, some chucklehead sneezes or coughs without a mask, you know, and now he just contaminated the whole bottle of Tito's. So I get that.
Yeah.
You know, I do get that. The 10 o'clock curfew thing was a joke. It just, COVID decides to go to bed at 10. It's an early sleeper. He does not stay up late. He's up early in the morning. Very busy. He's very, very busy. Gets up at around 5:30 a.m.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of, delis to contaminate.
Plus, just with all of the distancing that around the bars, man, you have, you know, seating over there, a table over there, a table over there. I'm not talking about before they bring back. I'm talking about before they brought back karaoke to our place. So, you know, it's just kind of like, you know, a little spot where, you know, where the bartenders are behind the bar and, you know, nobody's going to approach, man. You know, nobody's going to sneeze on Erica, you know. but now you can sneeze on Erica.
Please don't sneeze on Erica. Yeah, just definitely don't sneeze on Erica.
Yeah, no, I know. The Greta Van Fleet record, did you listen to it?
Bits and pieces. Pre-release, they released like the first song. Really heavy. I mean, from the artwork, the name of the record, which is not, I can't think of it right now.
Gates of the Dream. There's something there about the gates of, it's very, see, I, everything.
It is very Zeppelin, bro. It is very Zeppelin.
And that's a lot of the criticism I'm hearing. Like, see, I'm going to be honest. I haven't heard a note of this record, but everything I'm hearing is like the worst reviews of anything. They're saying that this is the, that they turned into the worst band like since Nickel, like the, as far as what they, like the way critics, gang up on a band, the way, man, I'm talking about the way critics gang up on a band.
I
like,
got you.
Like as far as a joke, that's not going to be good, since Nickelback.
Whoa, I hope not.
And this is, and yeah. So basically everything that we had in terms of the hopes that we had for this band, and not that they were necessarily going to be the next big thing in rock and roll, but that they were going to somehow get the industry to pay attention
back on track, okay,
and start signing and cultivating new rock and roll music, not rock and roll, but rock music to be brought back into the mainstream, you know, and throw some rock bands out into the mix. It didn't happen. There's no more rock music in top 40 radio than there was 3 years ago when the EP came out.
Let me throw this name. Let me throw this name at you. Wolfgang Van Halen. Did you hear that?
I heard he has something out. I haven't heard anything.
Search that, but, man. It's good.
Yeah.
That kid, you want to talk about a talent. Oh my God. He did a real cool little thing too. He played every instrument on it, first of all. Let's go there. So what he did was he recorded a video for it where it's all him. Mm-hmm. He's in the engineer's booth. He's pointing out the window to the guys. He's playing guitar, he's playing bass, he's playing drums, singing. And it was just a really cool little,
he's being cool
little video. Yeah, it was just a really cool little video that he did. That kid is super, super talented. Oh my God. I mean, to grow up under the mighty oak tree that was Eddie Van Halen, you know, and you're this acorn, and now he's starting to, you know, now that acorn, he's starting to grow into his own oak. Mm. I mean, it just to see that influence from his father is just baffling, mind blowing. Because not every athlete's son or daughter becomes an athlete.
Mm.
Not every rock musician's child becomes a musician. I mean, some of them do, some of them are successful, but you know, for lack of a better example, they like to just suck on the proverbial teat for the rest of their lives. You know, let's live off of daddy or mommy's money. But this kid is taking it to a whole nother level, man.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, I'd be real curious as to see what you thought about it.
Yeah, it's like I've gotten so far from, go figure, because our podcast is, you know, a rock oriented podcast. I in my own life, I've gotten so far from rock in the last year, 3 years, that I'm so clueless as to what's out there now. I remember like thinking, it was like, whoa, was it like about a year ago we were both talking about new records from Pearl Jam and the Strokes
And Fiona Apple.
Fiona Apple. And I thought that was like a big thing. Like, oh my God, like three bands that I like releasing an album in the same month. Like that hadn't happened in 20 years. Because remember in the 80s and the 90s when every week there were like 5-6 great releases. Every month had something great coming out. But it always blows my mind how at the end of the year, all of the critics gather around their top 50 records of 2020 and their top 25 singles of 20. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, I didn't hear two good records in 2020. Like, I don't think I heard fucking five records in 2020. I can't name five good records. I can't name five new records that I've listened to in the last year.
I might be falling victim to that. Believe it or not, I'm listening to, there's only one song out right now, but they apparently did a record together. The first I heard it, Mike Sergak posted it on Facebook and was like, wow. So I click and it's Bruno Mars with this guy, Anderson .Paak. Anderson .Paak opened for him on one of Bruno Mars's tours. I've always liked Bruno. He's very soulful. Reminds me of a like that 70s soul musician. I've always been drawn to his music. So I click play on this and it's the YouTube video. Let me tell you something, Mike, blown away by how good this is as a R&B soul record. Just, it's stunning. So apparently they did an entire record together to the point where they call it Silk Sonic. And Bootsy Collins himself gave them the name because he is blown away by this. It reminds you of something of the stylistics, the Manhattans. I mean, these guys, it is just major league R&B soul in the year 2021. It's that good, man. It's tight. It's every verse is sang. Every verse is sung with meaning, I'm blown away by how good it is, and I've been turning everybody onto it, or trying to turn everybody onto it that I possibly can, to the point where I annoyed some of my coworkers.
this is what I've been listening to. I'm holding this up for Pat. Listeners won't be able to see this. I'm really into right now just listening to a lot of early.
Is that jazz?
Curtis Mayfield's
first
solo record. This is the one before Superfly.
I think you'll dig this new song, man. Yeah. You do some homework on that one. I think you'll really enjoy it.
And also the Philly stuff is up, like the Philadelphia Soul, Philadelphia International Records, and stuff like that. The Gambling Huff stuff.
It's amazing. You know what amazes me? Speaking about Philadelphia, two white guys from Philadelphia got so popular, Hall & Oates, as an R&B soul act.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember listening to an interview with Daryl Hall and how much he hated MTV and hated you had to have an image. We got to get you a video on MTV. I don't know. I think I'd like to think that their music would have stood the test of time without all the video nonsense. Like one of their later records. Big Bang Boom. Yeah, it was Big Bang Boom or something like that was one of their later records. And I just remember him, he was bitching. It wasn't a bad album. It wasn't horrible. It wasn't their best. But I think it was on the Howard Stern show, to be honest with you, that he was bitching about. He goes, they wanted us to make this fucking video where we come jumping out of this big bass drum. And I was like, what the fuck? That's not us. This is not fucking Hall & Oates. And it just really amused me to no end.
That was around the time where they started hanging out with the Temptations.
Yes.
And around the time of Live Aid, in the mid, when they kind of, Hall & Oates kind of hit their peak of popularity, and then they kind of went back and started embracing their roots. Rich Girl and Sarah Smile was mid 70s, and you know they had that 5-year gap between hits and then they come back as a pop act. And Voices came out, and Private Eyes came out.
Private Eyes and Maneater and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, for that, for stuff like that, though, they had like that little nugget, like one on one, which was a really soulful. That's the one, yeah. That really soulful,
like, I love Paul play Rose, on man.
That real fan. Soulful play on that old. Yeah, I'm definitely a fan of that group. It's just amazing how we're both listening to like soulful stuff right now. We're not even. Again, I got the Greta Van Fleet record. I, you know, the Wolfgang Van Halen thing was good. So it's just amazing to me how where's rock and roll, man? Where the fuck is rock and roll?
I'm fine doing a rock podcast, man, because rock is always under fire. Rock is currently under fire now from just the fact that it's just, and you know, it is, again, it is what it is, man. But rap stars, hip hop, are the new rock stars. That's just the way it is now. Kendrick Lamar is Bob Dylan for this generation. And, you know, I'm perfectly fine with that, man. That's just the way it is, you know?
Yeah, they're starting to lead your way into country music of all things, yeah. Too.
So it is okay. It is what it is.
Sure it is.
Again, rock has always been under fire from the moment Elvis Presley walked on the Ed Sullivan Show. Rock's been under fire through the Beatles, through record burnings and through Ozzy Osbourne and Satanism, man, and kids killing themselves to Judas Priest songs. Rock has always been under fire. And like I said, as long as we have anything to do with it, it always will be. But
yeah.
That said, I mean, I'm listening to all kinds of Philly soul, man, the Spinners, the Stylistics, Blue Magic, you know, Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes, man, all this great stuff. I mean, there's so much. There's like, 5 lifetimes worth of music to discover, man, going back without ever having to hear a new group again, man. It's so much music out there, man. I'm listening to this, man. I just bought this. Again, I'm holding this up to the camera. Audience won't see it. This is Dexter Gordon, saxophone. I'm listening to a lot of jazz, man. I'm listening to this guy, McCoy Tyner. He was John Coltrane's piano player. He was one of the secret weapons to John Coltrane's, you know, 1960s records. Good stuff, man. There's just so much stuff to discover. I'm always listening to music, just not a lot of rock music
days, man. That right now,
yeah. Hey, it is what it is. I totally lost what I was going to say, though. Back up. Where were we before we started talking about, like, where were we just about 2 minutes ago?
I was talking about Bruno Mars.
Yeah. All right. Paul and Oates. Okay. Right before the shutdowns, I was going to go see the one show that I was planning on seeing was Hall and Oates and Squeeze.
Oh, Kansas. Wow.
And that was supposed to be last summer. That was supposed to be last August. So it's an act that I would love to see. I've never seen Hall and Oates.
I have. I saw them in their heyday, too. And it was the day after Madonna played The Garden on the Like a Virgin tour. So, like, the buzz in the crowd was all Madonna at the Garden. And it was at Liberty State Park.
I saw Madonna at the Garden twice.
That's pretty cool. it was Hall & Oates, Till Tuesday, and Gary U.S. Bonds
at Liberty State Park. Gary U.S. Bonds, wow.
Yeah. It was a wild show, man. It was an outdoor thing. It was just a lot of fun, man. It was just we were right up front, real close. That was a cool show, man. And they, like I said, they were at the peak then. You know what I mean? They were firing on all cylinders at that time. Yeah.
State Park, man. Yeah, I once went. I don't know if I ever told you the story about, like, well, I won't get into it now. But I ended up, long story short, I went to see Simon and Garfunkel one night at it wasn't at the Garden Arena, Madison Square Garden Arena.
The Forum underneath
theater. Well, the theater would be the Felt Forum, but it became the theater at the Garden.
Right.
And Simon and Garfunkel, they were doing one of their reunions. They were on tour. This was in 1993. And
Wait. Hold up a second. Why didn't they play the Garden? Why did they play downstairs?
Because Madonna had the Garden for the entire week.
Oh, wow.
So I guess it was a matter of scheduling or the fact that maybe they just weren't doing those massive venues. They were doing
the numbers. Yeah.
Yeah, they were doing theaters. And Simon and Garfunkel had it booked for 25 shows or something. It was something crazy. So they spent the entire month of October at the theater in the Garden. But anyway, I didn't have a ticket. I put 120 what is it, $150 or something in my pocket, which was a lot of money in 1993. And I went up to the garden and I'm outside, and on one side, you know how there's like when you're outside the garden on 7th Avenue and you could approach it from the left side or the right side, and in the middle yeah. is where you go underneath to go to the trains, right? Yeah. So on one side, it was all Madonna merchandise. And on the other side, it's all Simon and Garfunkel merchandise. And then people walking around selling tickets or whatever. And both shows are happening, man. This, I mean, the garden was raging, man.
Jesus Christ.
Like, so you can imagine 7th Avenue and 31st Street and 33rd Street and what it was like around the garden, right? So I go there hoping to scalp a ticket for Simon and Garfunkel. Turns out Garfunkel was sick that night.
Oh.
And the concert got canceled. So before heading downtown to the Village to do whatever, I was like, let me see what's going on over here. I wander over to the Madonna side, and I'm walking around. I'm looking at merchandise. I'm looking at shirts. I'm just kind of like, and just out of curiosity, man, I go up to one of the scalpers. I was like, what are you selling those for? $150. That's what I got. I didn't even try to haggle, or what do they call it? Like, what do they call it when you try to
barter or haggle? Yeah, you're right.
Here, man. I fucking went in and I saw Madonna. It was the girly show.
Oh, Jesus.
Erotica. And then I saw her again about 10 years later for Music, right before 9/11.
I like that record, Music, actually.
It's a great record, man.
Yeah, I do like that record from her a lot.
Madonna, man, all of like the real big Madonna fans swear by like the 80s stuff, man. But I'm weird. My favorite Madonna period is the period that I like Ray of Light, Music, and American Life. Like those three. Me, those are her three best records. But, you know, that's just from my rock-centric mind, you know, because
I love her. I love her early stuff, man. I really do. There you go. Rock Under Fire fans, you got it out of me. You squeezed it right out of me.
off topic, man, but pertaining to you, when is Riley's book coming out, man? Is it out? Is it coming out? Is it?
No, it's.
Oh, is this a bad
still wait.
Should I not bring this up? Or...
No, that's fine. We're still waiting to hear from Barnes & Noble.
Okay, because I was wondering, I was just like, I thought she put the announcement out about a month or so ago, and then I didn't remember if like she announced
We wanted it to try and be May 1st, but that didn't happen. So what's happened since she got her, what's it, an ISBN number? Am I correct in saying that?
Right, ISBN number.
Okay. She's got one for the digital edition and for the paperback edition.
Okay.
She's got both of those. It's copywritten. She's got the certification in the mail and everything.
Good.
So now she reached out to do the self-publishing through Barnes & Noble. But now what Barnes & Noble is saying is they're going through everybody that they're getting stuff from. So this is going to probably be a little bit of a process. Now, in the meantime...
Did she sign any contracts yet?
No.
Nothing?
No.
Okay, so she can still go with anybody?
Yeah, she owns her she owns that ISBN number. She can do whatever she wants.
Take it. Okay. Okay.
So in the meantime, a publisher from Pittsburgh reached out to her, because once you copyright something, it goes out into the free world, basically. And I guess they scan this stuff. And so I can't remember the publisher's name off the top of my head, Mike. I wish I could.
Yeah.
So they are like, I get on the phone with Riley. I was like, look, she's a minor. You know, I'm here sitting with her. I'm her father. And they said, well, can we read your manuscript? And I said, yeah, I think Riley would let, you know, and Riley got excited. She's like, yeah, read the manuscript. Sure. It's copywritten. I have the ISBN numbers. And the woman was like, oh, wow, you're a few steps ahead in the game here, which is a good thing. The lady reaches back out to us in like 5 days, and they're like, we love it. We want to go with it, but it's a pay up front type deal. They want like $2,000 up front.
Fuck that, dude. Fuck that.
I mean, she's still gonna have to pay, even go through,
dude,
Barnes & Noble.
That's like we a didn't fucking scam, dude.
Right, right. And we didn't want to, we didn't sign the contract.
Yeah, good.
We did not.
Yeah, good.
The Barnes & Noble thing, she's still kind of gonna have to pay up front anyway, because you got to pay to print, basically, is what it is. It's like a pay to play type deal.
Yeah.
That she wants to go that route, I think. It's just taking a little bit longer, but all the ducks are lined up. I mean, she has everything, the cover design. Everything is ready to go. As soon as they say, okay, we're ready to go.
But let me ask you, man, and we can cut this part out if you want, man, if you don't. If
you're, okay.
When you say pay to play, man, do they want money from her up front, Barnes & Noble, man? Or is it going to be like it's like print on demand? So
I think they print 10 books and they
deduct the money to make it from her royalty.
Yes, I think that's the way it is.
I'm not with Barnes & Noble. Barnes & Noble sells my book, but it's made by Ingram. Like it's made by Ingram Spark. So it's basically the same thing. It's print on demand. That's the way it goes. Don't put a fucking penny out up front, bro.
Yeah. No. I put the kibosh on it. So for the people listening, my daughter is 17. She started this. People are probably like, what the hell are these two talking about? Mm. My daughter's 17. She started a school project. She's in creative writing. She started this school project and it kind of grew wheels, if you will. And she turned it into a short book, about 100-page book, and decided that she wanted to self-publish it. And Mike has helped out a lot. Actually to the point where she thanked you in the book, Mike. and so she decided that she wanted to self-publish it. And it's really trying, you know, right now it's starting to gain a little momentum and everybody's proud of her. Everybody that's read it has nothing but great things to say about it.
I was blown away by it, man.
And my thing, Mike, is that her college transcript is going to say her high school, you know, her transcripts to get into college is going to say that at 17 years old, she published her own book.
She's a published author. Yeah.
Exactly. That's a big deal to me. And I think a school is going to look at that and they say, okay, we're going to welcome that. Maybe we have the next so-and-so on our hands. Maybe we don't, maybe we do. To be a successful fictional writer is probably just as hard as being a successful rock star.
She should be able to pick and choose her college, man, because it'd be a privilege to have this published author at their school. You know what I mean?
Right. So that, you know, for me, do I want her to be successful? Obviously, I'm her dad. Of course, I want to see her gain success from doing something she enjoys. But to me, it's the college thing. I think she wants to get into teaching. That at least I don't think. I mean, it looks like that's what she's going to do. Like you said, you know, a school's going to look at that and say, hey, yeah, we want this kid here. Maybe her grades aren't exactly where they are, but she excels at this. And that's a great thing because she's not an A student. She's just not. Writing she is, and English she pretty much is, but she's not blowing the wheels off the bus with algebra. But who the fuck, you know, I don't use algebra anymore. I'm fucking 51 years old.
I'm still waiting to use algebra. Yeah. I don't know if I ever. I feel cheated, man. All the bullshit they put me through in high school and college, man. Algebra. It took me five fucking times to pass algebra in college, man. I quit college for many years, man, because of algebra. And I'm still waiting to use it. And I'm just wondering if anybody's going to come and let me know when we'll be using the algebra anytime. Any of those fucking professors, man, from Kane University, man, and Middlesex County College and Woodbridge High School and Mr. fucking Yanazzo. When does the algebra start?
So, Mike, I'm going to need you to go ahead and solve for X for me.
Mm. With that. That's another one in the can. So I don't know. This was we're bringing in a new season of episodes. Still talking about rock music and then some. We've had authors on the show. We've had photographers on the show. We've had rock and roll ex-wives on the show.
Yeah.
We've had guest DJs on the show.
We've had friends on the show.
We haven't any sports people on the show yet? No, not yet.
No, not yet.
We've had.
I'm still trying to figure out how to get my dog involved.
We need a pet on the show. Yeah, we've had a. We're open to all ideas on the podcast. Leave us your feedback. We do have a YouTube page, which means that we put out YouTube videos and the comments are not disabled. You can comment on our shows. Leave us feedback. I mean, we don't really check our social media. You know, it'd be useless for you to comment on our Facebook page, or our Twitter page has been disabled for like 5 years.
We can't remember the password.
I tried to get the fucking password from you and you didn't know it.
Like, I can't remember.
And then you had one job. You had one job, Twitter. That was your only fucking job, was Twitter. You don't know your
password, man. Okay, I will make it a goal of mine to get that settled. I will definitely make it a goal of mine to get that settled.
Dude, I don't care about Twitter anymore, man. It's like, dude, we lost Twitter. I'm on Twitter now promoting my own book, man. Like, I have, like, most of my social media, because I check Facebook. You know, I check Facebook every once in a while, man. Facebook is like high school. Facebook is just like, what are my high school friends doing? who's complaining about the president? You know, so let me see what they're doing now. But I'm usually on Twitter now. Everything I do is on Twitter. But the podcast is like defunct, man, on Twitter. I mean, if you want to get that going again, that's up to you. I don't care. It's not, I don't care. It's fine. But to our listeners, leave us your feedback. I mean, you know, we do check. We do get notifications on Facebook. We'll check it. There are ways of reaching us.
I think that we should revisit a certain someone who we had cocktails with a couple of weeks ago, the three of us sitting there. I think we should revisit him assuming control of some of our social media for the podcast site. Make him an admin.
Yes, I think that's a possibility. If he could breathe some life into it, Rob. If you're listening.
I wasn't gonna name him yet, but okay.
But we named half of him. We gave half of him away. We gave his leg away.
Yeah.
Here's a leg.
A leg.
It's Rob's one leg.
One to stand on. Still waiting for you to solve for X, Mike. It was fun to be back. It was lighthearted banter, as always. Love it.
We'll be back. We'll be back in a few weeks.
Pouring on me, bad news keep pouring on me, bad news keep pouring on me.